Before Spider-Man could begin his investigations, Peter Parker had stopped to make at the hospital to visit his students. He'd been trying to come every day insofar as his crime-fighting duties permitted. Most of the students' progress was heartening. Susan Laberteau and Koji Furuya had already been released. Though Koji would be on crutches for a while, Susan had sustained only a simple fracture to her left arm, along with various cuts and bruises. Joan Robinoff and Angela Campanella were still inpatients, being treated for more serious injuries. But Bobby Ribeiro had taken the worst of it. He'd sustained head trauma from the falling debris and was still in a coma. He was breathing on his own, his body healing, but the doctors couldn't say whether his brain would recover or to what extent. That bright, active, contentious mind, a source of such trouble and hope for Peter as his teacher, now lay dormant and might never return. Bobby's mother, Consuela, was there with him every day, watching over him, leaving her other four children in her sister's care, since their father had run out on her.
Hi, Mrs. Ribeiro. Is there any change?
Nada. I don't know what to do. I can't afford to leave him here much longer, but how can I take care of him at home when I have so many others?
Well, if there's anything I can do to help, just let me know.
No, I do not want handouts. That man Jameson, he tried to offer money. Said it was to make up for sending out my Roberto's picture onto the internet where the perverts could see him. But he wanted it in exchange for an interview. More exploitation. I tell him where his money can go.
Good for you. I want you to know, Mrs. Ribeiro, I'll do everything in my power to find the people responsible for what happened to these kids and see them brought to justice.
No more hollow words, Señor Parker. You are a teacher, not la policía. Do not boast to me of things you cannot do. That will not help my son.
Don't take it personally.
Peter turned to see Dawn Lukens approaching, her usually cheery face downturned, her wavy brown hair hanging limp.
We're all feeling frustrated and helpless about this. Wishing there was something we could do to make a difference, but knowing there's nothing we can do but wait and hope.
There is something we can do. We can help the other kids through this by showing them our confidence, by being strong for them.
I don't know if I can do that anymore, Peter. You know, I had such high ideals when I started out. I was gonna mold young minds, inspire curiosity. I was going to be a different kind of teacher. A friend who'd share the journey with them rather than a taskmaster. Instead, I end up spending half my time confiscating cell phones and breaking up fights and praying that nobody in the room has a gun, waging a losing battle to keep kids focused on their homework while they're struggling with poverty and gangs and deadbeat parents.
She stared at Bobby's room.
And now this.
Don't be so hard on yourself. You're a good teacher. The students respect you.
Ugh, that's just it. I don't feel I deserve that anymore, if I ever did. My kids keep asking me why this happened, and I don't know what to tell them. I don't know what to tell them about anything anymore. I've run out of answers. I just don't think I can do this job anymore.
Just give it some time. Things will get better. I know it.
You just don't get it, do you? You think it's all so easy. You're just a kid. An amateur. I thought you would have learned some humility from this experience, but you're just in denial.
I am not. A terrible thing happened here. I understand that, better than you can know. But I also understand that there's nothing to be gained wasting time on blaming ourselves and beating ourselves up. That just gets in the way of finding real solutions.
Not everything has a solution, Peter. Bobby Ribeiro may never wake up again. What kind of solution can we give our kids for that?
I guess you have to do what you think is best. If you don't think you can help these kids anymore, maybe you need to find some other way you can make a meaningful contribution. But I wouldn't make any hasty decisions if I were you.
Look, Peter, I know you mean well, but don't quit your day job and try to become a grief counselor, okay?
But Dawn was wrong. There was something Peter could do to make a difference. She may not have thought she had any answers, but he knew where to look for his. A quick check at Ravencroft Asylum confirmed that Dmitry Smerdyakov, aka the Chameleon, aka about 1,000 other people at various times, was still incarcerated securely and in no condition to be impersonating anyone. With that avenue closed off, Spider-Man spent the next couple of days checking out the usual suspects in a case like this. He considered it something of a waste of time, since he knew that Jameson was involved somehow, and would have preferred to keep his focus there. But he investigated the other robot makers he knew of just to satisfy MJ and Aunt May that he was considering all the options. The first stop, naturally, was Alistair Alfonso Smythe, the unstable inventor who had inherited the Spider Slayer franchise from his late father. As far as Peter knew, Smythe was still locked up in Rikers Island after their last clash. But given the way his old enemies seemed to crop up unexpectedly, he knew he had to make certain. Fortunately, he had some prior experience at breaking into this particular penitentiary, though not often enough that they'd learn to Spidey-proof the facility or to train their guards to keep an eye on the ceilings. He came upon Smythe's cell to find it occupied by its expected tenant. Smythe had gone through many looks over the years, but Spidey recognized him from their last encounter. Lean-bodied, pale-skinned, with wild shoulder-length brown hair. All that was missing were his glasses. He was brooding, absorbed in thought, until Spidey moved forward and caught his eye. Smythe squinted up at him.
Spider-Man.
Ah, there we go. Finally a bad guy who understands the etiquette of these things. I show up, the bad guy looks skyward, gasps my name in disbelief, and wets himself.
Don't flatter yourself, Arachnid. You wouldn't frighten me even if there weren't inches of Lexan reinforced glass between us.
And that's another thing I like about the more educated class of villain. Too many people out there don't know the difference between insects and arachnids. But you always get it right. And I just want you to know, Allie, I appreciate it.
Keep ranting, Spider-Man. The guards will be by on their rounds any minute now.
Oh, I just stopped by for a brief chat. How are you, Allie? Enjoying the prison diet? Getting enough exercise? Making any new friends? Built any good robots lately?
Oh, yes, I heard about your little run-ins. And you think that I somehow had something to do with them? From in here?
Wouldn't be the first time an inmate here made creative use of the machine shop.
Yes, the escapes of Dr. Octopus and the Vulture are the stuff of legend on the prison grapevine. Which is why they don't let technically gifted inmates use the machine shop without extremely close supervision. Anyway, I'm insulted that you'd attribute such crude pieces of hardware to me. Trust me, Spider-Man, when you meet your demise at the claws of a spider slayer, you will know it is my handiwork. And besides, weren't you accusing Jameson of being behind the attack?
I'm exploring various leads.
Are you actually addle-brained enough to imagine I would work with that smear upon humanity? The man who engineered my father's death by pitting him against you in the first place?
Hey, he came to Jonah.
The man who's responsible for my being incarcerated here? Who took a baseball bat to me in our last encounter? I want him dead, Spider-Man. Possibly more than I want you dead. Although that's certainly subject to change.
Aw, hey, Allie, you should be grateful to me. Used to be a fat slob, but after all these years of chasing me, you got yourself a Bowflex body.
I actually liked being a fat slob, Spider-Man. It was a lot less work. But I can't let myself go again until I see you and Jameson dead. I just hope that whoever's behind these robots takes care of at least half that task for me.
And just who might that be?
I only wish I knew, Spider-Man. So I could have the pleasure of not telling you. I'll just have to settle for the pleasure of knowing you're completely clueless.
Spider-Man waited, but nothing more was forthcoming.
What, that's all I get? No malevolent laugh? Whatever happened to villain etiquette?
Maybe the guards will give you a lesson on the etiquette of entering where you're not invited. Goodbye, Spider-Man!
Spidey hastily made his way out of the area, but he still had one more stop to make before leaving the prison. He needed to make sure that Electro was still incarcerated. He found him in a wing reserved for special prisoners. In a cell, specially insulated, just for him.
You in a rubber room. Somehow, Sparky, it seems like a match made in heaven.
You.
Dylan clenched his fists, his hair standing on end. But nothing more than that happened. The Avengers had made sure that he was electrically discharged, and without access to an electrical source, he wasn't able to charge up the living chemical battery that was his body. All he had right now was whatever charge his own nervous system could generate. The insulation was more to keep him from influencing electrical systems outside his cell than to keep him from zapping his way out.
Yeah, mock me all you want, Webhead. The fact is, I beat you again, and this time I hardly had to break a sweat.
Maybe, but what do you have to show for it? You didn't get the diamonds, you lost your cool new toys, and you got beat up by a girl.
Yeah, sure.
But I hear you're still having robot troubles anyway.
Where'd you hear that?
Around.
If you know something...
What can I know from in here? I don't even have a TV or a radio. Some cops question me about it, that's all. That's the catch with these powers. When I'm in here, it's no phones, no lights, no motor cars, not a single luxury. Just gives me more incentive to get out again.
So why did the cops ask you about it, I'm wondering?
Because cops are idiots. Always looking into every lead, even the stupid ones. I stole some robot, staged a heist, and you got in the way! So naturally, when some wacko sends a homemade robot to kill you personally, they gotta ask if I know anything. I told them what I know, that they're a bunch of clueless morons. Hell, I don't need to kill you! I already beat you!
Great! So now you can retire and give up this life of crime.
You wish.
Spidey left before the guards came by. He was tired of Electro's attitude, and there wasn't much to learn here anyway. Although Electro may have learned how to remote control robots, there was no way he was capable of building them.
So, who does that leave?
Peter and MJ lay in bed together the following night, practically the first chance they'd gotten to talk since brunch the day before. Although they'd waited to talk until after they'd addressed more pressing marital priorities.
There's the Tinkerer.
Peter referred to Phineas Mason, an inventor extraordinaire who supplied mechanical armor, weapons, and other devices for various criminals.
Robots aren't his usual line, but he's built one or two that I know of.
But what's his motive? I mean, maybe he's not your biggest fan, but he's never really gone after you directly, has he? He's a businessman, so where's the profit in it?
You're right. In fact, a lot of his business comes from people looking for stronger weapons to bash me with. I probably put his grandkids through college, if he has grandkids.
If so, they must get the coolest toys.
Anyway, I asked Felicia to look into it.
MJ cooled a bit at the mention of his old flame. But Felicia Hardy had done business with the Tinkerer in the past, purchasing power-enhancing devices to compensate for the loss of her superpowers and allow her to continue her career as the Black Cat.
They have a business relationship, so she should be able to find out if he's involved in this. I don't think it's likely, though.
So, who else is a suspect? What about the Robot Master?
No, I checked that. Strom's still dormant.
Dormant?
Didn't I tell you about that? It happened just before I found out you were still alive.
MJ winced at the reminder of her abduction. Peter went on to tell her about his latest encounter with Mendel Strom, the industrialist inventor who had turned to crime as the Robot Master. Instead of trying to attack him with robots, as he'd done in the past, Strom had actually contacted Spider-Man for help. A computer program Strom had created in his own image had turned on him, trying to take over his mind and disassembling his body until he was only a head attached to life support equipment in a lair beneath a Con Ed switching station. The program had experimented with the city's power grid, attempting to assert control, and in the process had overloaded the power lines in Times Square and caused a storm of electrical surges, jeopardizing hundreds of lives simply by learning how to walk. Strom had told Spider-Man of its drive to reproduce itself and take over the world's computer networks. The only way to prevent the ruthless program from spreading, he had said, was to kill Strom himself, putting him out of his misery in the process. Unable to take a life even in those circumstances, Peter had instead gotten a programmer friend to devise a virus that would freeze Strom and his AI doppelganger in a recursive loop, essentially putting them in a coma until he could find a way to rescue Strom the man without unleashing Strom the program on the world. Unfortunately, the demands of his life had left Peter with little time to work on a solution, and though he kept the problem in mind, he had made no progress.
He's still as comatose as ever. And I long since dismantled all the equipment that wasn't part of his life support, so it can't be him.
Who else?
Well, there's Edwin Hills, the software billionaire. When you were out in Hollywood, he sent a robot after me as part of some crazy scheme to stage hero-villain fights on underground TV and take bets on the winners. But his robot was just so lame. It really wasn't made for fighting. I mean, it announced its attacks before it made them. No way a dweeb like that could come up with anything as devious as that chopper bot.
Oh, what about Doc Ock? He invented those arms.
Yeah, but he's never done much with robots otherwise. He's too egotistical to let a machine do his spidey killing for him. Except for the arms, but he thinks of them as part of himself. And he's still in the news after that Triple X business. If he'd broken out since then,
We'd have heard.
Any other robots in your checkered past?
Peter had little else to offer besides a few miscellaneous encounters. There were numerous supervillains with the technical know-how, the Wizard, Arcade, even Dr. Doom, but none of them had motives that he could discern. The Wizard mostly targeted the Fantastic Four, and Arcade specialized in android doubles and ridiculously elaborate death traps, and Dr. Doom considered Spider-Man beneath his notice. He'd once told off the Latverian dictator to his face, but that had been after saving his life, which by Doom's twisted sense of honor, had made them even.
And the bottom line is, Jameson's the one who set off my spider sense. He's my best suspect.
He's no robot builder.
But his wife is.
Marla? You think she's behind this too?
That's what I'm gonna find out tomorrow.
Spider-Man felt a little uneasy whenever his business took him to the Upper East Side. This was pretty much the priciest swath of real estate in the whole country, a favorite stomping ground of movers and shakers. And Spidey always felt like he should don a white tie and cufflinks over his costume before he went there. It was just a bit too rarefied for a middle-class boy from Queens. But that, he reminded himself, was the old insecure Spider-Man. Besides, he lived not far from here once, briefly, back when MJ's career had been particularly lucrative, and it didn't make him any better than he was now, living in a crumbling brownstone with a diabolical Rottweiler plotting against him.
I'm the one who keeps the city safe for people like them, so I have as much right to be here as anyone.
If Marla Jameson was the one building the robots, he was determined to find out. So he took up a perch across the street from the building whose penthouse she and Jonah shared, and he waited. After a while, he saw a familiar figure, 40-ish, short-haired, bespectacled, severe but attractive in a bookish kind of way, emerging from the lobby and being escorted to a waiting car by a pair of hired security types.
Jonah's anticipated me. He's got Marla guarded.
That was okay, though. He didn't want to attack her, just see where she went. He knew she had a lab at Empire State University, but if she was working on a secret project, she might be operating out of some other facility. He crawled down the side of the building to get within range to fire a spider tracer at her car. He was confident of his ability to track it visually, but just in case he lost it in traffic or got sidetracked by a crime in progress, the tracer's signal would help him find it again. But before he could fire the tracer off, one of the guards spotted him.
Spider-Man, 10 o'clock high!
Crap. Jonah did a good job telling them what to look for. So much for the subtle approach.
There would be no way to tail Marla now. So he decided to conduct an impromptu interview instead. He came in for a landing atop the car.
We need to talk, Mrs. Jameson.
He realized he was getting a danger signal from her, just as he'd gotten from Jonah.
What have you got to do with the robot attacks?
But the danger signal intensified, alerting Spidey to new threats coming from all around. More security troops were pouring out from the lobby and the sides of the building, and a sudden impulse told Spidey to look down at his chest, where he saw several points of laser light converging.
Stand down, wall crawler, or we will open fire!
I know how to stand up, but how do I stand down? Is that like a handstand?
Glancing back, he saw Marla being hustled back into the building by the guards. He fired a tracer back to stick to the undercarriage of Marla's car, but it was a long shot, since he expected that Jameson security would locate and neutralize it before they'd let this car be used again. He had missed his chance, and whatever Marla was up to, she'd be extra careful from now on.
But now I know that she and Jonah are both up to no good.
Naturally, Jameson was all over the incident with Marla in his blog. He ranted about how Spider-Man had begun stalking his family, how his wife was afraid to go out on the streets and was besieged in her own home, and so forth. He cited the web-slinger's increasingly confrontational attitude as evidence of his growing instability, even as Peter grew increasingly convinced that Jameson was the one who'd flipped. Frustratingly, though, public opinion seemed more sympathetic toward Jameson. The local news was full of Vox Populi interviews of people expressing concern for that poor Mrs. Jameson, labeling Spider-Man a stalker and making some rather disturbing insinuations about his intentions toward Marla. Even the headlines in more balanced newspapers like The Times and The Globe were beginning to sound more like a typical bugle banner. It didn't matter, Peter reassured himself. He'd been accused of worse before, and the truth would come out. And he was growing increasingly certain of the Jamesons' guilt in the robot incidents. Felicia had reported that the Tinkerer had no robots in the works and was, in fact, on an out-of-state vacation. Peter had found that suspicious, but Felicia had assured him of her thoroughness in confirming the alibi. She'd investigated his vacant workshops for herself, confirming there were no major robotics projects underway. She tracked his activities and found no sign that he'd received the necessary material for such a project. She'd even obtained airport footage that showed him boarding a plane from JFK and disembarking in Miami. Although she remained vague about the method she had used to obtain the information, and Peter wasn't sure he wanted to know, Felicia was confident that Mason was not involved. And Peter trusted that where a possible threat to his safety was concerned, the Black Cat would not let go of a lead unless she was certain it went nowhere. So with other viable suspects thin on the ground, the Jamesons looked more and more likely to be guilty. The idea of Jolly Jonah being discredited and put away once and for all held considerable appeal for Spider-Man. He often wondered how different his career would have been if JJJ hadn't been there every step of the way, turning public opinion against him. He could imagine if Jonah were gone for good, if Robbie ran the paper. Robbie Robertson was a fair man who believed in Spider-Man's good intentions. Maybe in such a world, Spidey could finally redeem his image and get the recognition he had earned. But first, he needed to get some solid evidence against Jameson. Doing so as Spidey was not working out well, so he decided it was time for a little undercover work as Peter Parker. He'd worked at the Bugle long enough that nobody would find it odd if he showed up there. Plus, it was a nice opportunity to catch up with the old gang. Indeed, as soon as he arrived in the city room, Betty Brant, once his high school sweetheart and now a veteran reporter, spotted his arrival.
Peter!
Hey, Bets!
She ran over and hugged him.
How's the Bugle's prettiest reporter doing these days?
I don't know. Why don't you ask him yourself?
Betty gestured Ben Urich's way. The unkempt balding scribe gave her a faux laughing expression, waving hello at Peter, but apparently too busy on a story to do more.
Don't be offended. He's on the scent of a string of robberies.
When is he not?
Peter spent a few minutes getting caught up with Betty and the others in the newsroom, and soon Robbie Robertson caught wind of it and came to greet him.
Pete, hi. I was hoping you'd come in. I wanted to let you know how sorry I was about your students. If any of them need any help with their medical bills, you just let us know.
Thanks, Robbie. I knew you'd feel that way.
I apologize for what Jonah did. You know how he gets carried away. But once he realized that what he had done had been hurtful to you, well, he's not the type to admit it, but he regrets it.
You don't have to apologize for him, Robbie. In fact, I came to see him myself. There's some things we need to talk about.
What's all this chatter going on here? Is this a newsroom or a social club?
The danger tingle kicked in.
Oh, Parker, it's you. I should have known. Bad enough the way you treated this place as your private clubhouse when you actually took photos for me. Don't you have any pecks of pickled peppers you can go pick?
He's really missed you, man.
Robbie patted Peter on the back and went on his way.
You know I couldn't stay away from your dulcet tones for too long, Jonah.
Peter didn't want to give away his suspicions, but there were other things he didn't want these shrewd journalists to catch on to. Spider-Man's full face mask muffled his voice somewhat, but it was a limited disguise. Mostly he relied on the different personas he projected. As Peter, he had always been soft-spoken, originally out of shyness. Under the mask, he'd felt free to be brash, raucous, and confrontational in the way he spoke. It had been an effective accidental camouflage for his voice, and he'd learned to cultivate it intentionally. So as much as he wanted to shout at Jameson right now, he knew he had to control his anger to keep something of Spider-Man's tones out of his voice. If Jameson was on some mad revenge kick, Peter couldn't dare let him discover his true identity. He wouldn't let MJ, May, or his friends be targeted again.
Does that mean you finally decided to come back to work for me? Do you have any idea how hard it's been to get good Spider-Man pictures since you quit?
I found something more important to do, Jonah. Something that means a lot to me and to a lot of good kids.
Look, if this is about those photos on my blog...
I'd rather discuss this in private.
Fine. Come up to my office. You know I took those pictures down, right?
The problem is that they were up at all.
And blame the jerk who put them online in the first place.
Oh, I do.
And blame Spider-Man. You should be as mad at him as I am, Parker. Those kids of yours would never have been hurt if he hadn't let those robots run around wild. I'm convinced he was behind setting them loose in the first place.
Do you have any proof of that?
Nothing solid yet. but maybe I would if you were still doing whatever you did that let you get all those pictures of him. Or maybe not. I always wondered what the connection was between you two. Always thought you knew more about him than you were telling. You wouldn't keep trying to protect him now, would you, Parker? Not after he got your students hurt.
I've got no ties to Spider-Man anymore, Mr. Jameson. I'm a teacher now, not a shutterbug. I don't need him anymore.
A thought occurred to Peter.
In fact, we had kind of a falling out a while back. I got tired of him always butting into my life, bullying me into giving him publicity. So I told him where he could go stick his webs.
Why, Parker, you have a spine after all. I'm proud of you, my boy. Believe me, you're better off away from that madman. Though it hasn't exactly done wonders for our circulation.
You know, I suppose I could be persuaded to help out the Bugle, for old time's sake.
You mean get out the old camera again? Go spider hunting?
It's possible, but on my terms this time.
Jameson led Peter into his office, or rather the temporary one he was using while his top floor executive suite was under repair. He hung his coat on the rack by the door. Peter hung back as Jameson moved to his desk. While the publisher's back was turned, Peter slipped his spider tracer from his pocket, squeezed it to activate the signal, and shoved it into the lining of Jameson's coat. Feeling its ultrasonic pulses with his spider senses, Peter moved away from the rack as Jameson turned to face him again.
In fact, since you've been so good to me over the years, I might be willing to take requests.
Like what?
Well, you tell me, Jonah. You're making a lot of specific accusations about old Webhead these days. Maybe you'd like to have photos that illustrated those charges in particular?
Oh, Parker, if you could actually catch him in the act, there'd be a bonus in it for you. I know, I'll put you on our family Christmas card list. But if you and he aren't getting along anymore, how could you get close enough to find the proof?
Oh, I'm sure something could be arranged.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Are you insinuating that I'd allow you to fake a news photo? I should have known. Why'd I ever let you talk me into taking you back? You got a lot of nerve taking advantage of my generosity like that.
Take it easy, Jonah. It was just an idle thought.
I'll idle you if you don't get out of my office. You kids today wouldn't know integrity if it mugged you in broad daylight. I'd never knowingly fake a story, and it's not like I'd need to fake it anyway. Go on, get out of my office.
Fine. Have it your way.
Spider-Man's guilty! I don't have to fake what's already true! Now get out! Out and don't darken my door again!
And with that, Peter was in the elevator again. He'd been hoping he could maneuver Jonah into confessing something, but Jameson was determined to keep up his act. Peter almost would have believed him if not for his spider sense. But then, Jameson could rant like that in his sleep, and probably did. It proved nothing. But Peter had managed to plant the tracer successfully.
I'll get the proof I need, soon enough.
After that, it was a matter of waiting. Spidey spent the next few hours patrolling around Midtown East and Murray Hill, while staying close enough to the Goodman building to sense it when Jameson started to move. That evening, when Jameson left the office, Spidey was ready, perched on the building across the street from the Bugle. He sensed the tracer signals shifting as it moved.
There he goes.
Jameson's car was heading out of the garage and heading west on 39th. Spider-Man fired a webline and swung after it. At the top of his swing, he fired another, shorter strand to the corner of the Burroughs building at 39th and 3rd. If Jameson turned north toward home, he could swing around to follow, but if the car kept moving west, he could release the strand and fire another to keep going straight. The car signaled for a turn, so Spidey let the line curve him around. But suddenly his spider sense twinged.
What?
And the line went slack. Now essentially a missile, he flipped and came in for a safe landing on the side of the 600 3rd Avenue building across the street. He looked around for the source of the attack and found it coming from above. A boxy shape was descending toward him, suspended on a pair of thin cables that anchored it to this tower and the Burroughs building. It seemed to be reeling out the cables to descend, but at differential rates, so that it drifted horizontally toward him. As it drew closer, he could see that it was made of a series of stacked drums that could rotate independently, like a bike chain tumbler lock on its side. A slit on one of the drums came to bear on him and fired some sort of whirling projectile.
Whoa!
He barely leapt clear. From the way it embedded itself in the black steel paneling where he'd just been, it must have been razor sharp. Spidey ducked behind the southeastern corner of the building, reached back around, and fired a glob of webbing at the robot. But another drum came to bear and fired a powerful jet of air that deflected the webbing. A new cable shot out to anchor itself above him, even as the first two cables were released and began reeling in. They were whipping around with considerable force as the robot swung toward him.
Whoa!
So Spidey had to leap clear to avoid being flayed. Unfortunately, the tallest building on the other side of the street, the Dryden East, was over 20 stories below him. Spread-eagling himself to stabilize his fall and drift west a little, he sprayed web mesh in a wide band spanning the street to give himself a landing net. It stretched as it caught him, absorbing his momentum, and as he clung to its bouncing surface, he looked up to see what the cable bot was doing next. It was lowering itself down the skyscraper on one cable and firing another to anchor on the Dryden East building. It then used a third cable to anchor on the 603rd building at its current height, released the first, and began swooping down toward Spider-Man, as soon as it neared his level, firing razor discs.
Yikes! These things are as fast as I am. Meaner, too.
He tumbled out of the net and fired a short web line, swinging to the low rooftops west of the Dryden, and took off running. The robot kept following, continuing to fire its cables and reel itself horizontally along them.
If I had any lingering doubts that these attacks were targeted at me, they're delingered now. This thing's custom-made for countering my moves.
On top of which, it was getting between him and Jameson. But while the cable bot was still climbing, Spidey had a chance to veer north and pick up his tracer signal again. He was just a few stories off the ground now, and the patrons of the laundry, deli, and Chinese restaurant below him were running to safety. He spotted a palm reader sign down below.
I wonder what she'd have to say about my lifeline right now.
Wanting to get this battle away from the street level, as much for his own sake as for the bystanders, he fired a line to the next tall building in his path, hoping to work his way up the increasingly taller skyscrapers to the northeast to reacquire his tracer signal. But as he swung upward, a razor disc from the northeast severed his web line, forcing him to come in for a landing on the mobile building's stainless steel wall.
What the heck?
He looked back to check. Indeed, the cable bot he'd been fleeing was still climbing toward him from the south, but a second one was now reeling toward him from the east.
Oh, sure, guys. Gang up on the one that doesn't have a metal skin.
Spider-Man clambered up to the roof, but once he made it to the broad level surface, the cable bot was already rolling forward on a tripod of wheeled legs, apparently using its air jets for propulsion, and firing razor discs at him. One slashed him across the left flank, tearing spandex and skin. He kept going despite the pain, preparing to jump and fire a web line at the nearest gargoyle on the Chrysler building across the street. If he could get to the spire, he'd have the high ground and control of the one and only approach route. But as he neared the roof edge, he saw a compact grappling claw secure to the corner. The first cable bot swung out ahead of him, building up speed as it rose, then slingshot past on a rising trajectory. It fired more discs his way as it did, and fired another cable to anchor on the lowermost tier of the Chrysler Building's terraced Art Deco spire, blocking his path to the northwest. Caught in a crossfire of razor discs, Spidey sustained another slash, this one across the thigh.
You're getting my tailor, Bill!
Now the second robot at the roof's other corner fired another cable to snag one of the Silver Falcon Chrysler gargoyles and lifted itself into the air, preventing Spidey from heading northeast.
Uh-oh. They evolved, they rebelled, and they have a plan.
He had to dodge left and go off the edge of the roof, firing a line to catch the southeast corner of the Channon building, swinging around to put that building between himself and the cable bots, and proceeding to the west. One cable bot was coming right behind him on 41st, the other swinging along 42nd to block him to the north.
I'm off my game. That's the trouble with fighting robots. Without anyone to hurl wisecracks at, my rhythm's off. At least with spider slayers, there's someone to talk to. How about it, guys? Anybody listening? Watching? Feel free to gloat.
One thing was for certain, though. They were definitely hurting him away from Jonah.
So why am I letting them? Stop being reactive, Spidey, and do something.
He veered south at Madison Avenue, looking for a good place to lure one of the robots into an ambush. He led the robots down Madison for two more blocks, then veered west and climbed toward the top of 425 Fifth Avenue, a slim yellow and blue tower with vertical white stripes, looking like something put together with a giant Lego set. This was the tallest building in the immediate area and relatively isolated, so to get up to him, the robots would have to anchor their cables on the tower itself. That gave Spider-Man his chance.
They've been sabotaging my line, so I might as well return the favor.
As soon as one of the robot's compact grapples snagged the building and dug in, Spidey sprayed web fluid up and down its length, coating it thickly for several yards worth. As the robot reeled itself up the cable toward him, it soon began reeling in the coated portion, and the webbing blocked the reeling mechanism. Spidey took a moment to put a new cartridge in each web shooter, then coated the grapple with more webbing and tore it free from the wall, letting it drop. The robot caught itself lower down with another two cables, one on the Lego set tower, the other near the top of 260 Madison Avenue, a lower white building half a block to the east. But the webbed cable continued to hang uselessly below it, twitching as the reeling mechanism struggled to clear the obstruction. Spidey headed downward to where its next cable was anchored and repeated the procedure there. The second cable bot was trying to get a bead on him, but he stood his ground. With two of the motors jammed, the remaining two cables couldn't be reeled in fully and thus couldn't be aimed and fired. This cable bot was immobilized.
Now what do I do? Oh, I know.
On the rooftop below were several of the small wooden water towers that were a trademark of the Manhattan skyline. Tearing the cable bot's last grapple free, Spidey swung the robot around and hurled it at one of the tanks, where it smashed through the conical roof. The bright flash from within proved that it hadn't been designed to go underwater.
Yes! Your buddy's down, baby! And now I'm coming for you!
But when he headed toward its nearest anchor point, about halfway up the Mercantile Building, the remaining cable bot unhooked it and fell away, retreating to the west.
Ha ha! You better run away! Nobody beats Spider-Man in my town, except no substitutes!
The cable bot had not been retreating, simply moving over to the next building, the Fifth Avenue Tower, a glass-walled condominium 33 stories high. It had fired three of its four cables through the glass and was sending a barrage of razor discs across the building's face, causing a cataract of broken glass to fall toward the condo's ninth-story sun deck and the street beyond. Spidey had only seconds to save the residents and shopgoers below, but he was half a block away. The only point in his favor was the air resistance slowing the falling glass, but that was a small favor. He kicked off the wall of 260 Madison as hard as he could, coming down on the intervening roof, and flew straight at the falling glass, firing web nets ahead of him. The webbing snagged most of the glass, and he swept his right shooter over to extend and attach it to the condo's facade so that the mass of webbing and glass swung in and struck the wall. The impact cracked more glass, and Spidey's own landing on the net a moment later worsened it. But still, the webbing held it together.
Woo! Yeah! Didn't see that coming, did ya?
But the mechanism was descending, firing its grapples through more windows and yanking them out again to send more glass at Spidey and the people below. He looked down, realizing that a few people were lying there, hurt by the shards of glass that he hadn't managed to catch. The old Spider-Man might have been paralyzed by guilt at being too slow, but today, Spidey instantly quashed any such thoughts and concentrated on the task at hand, spraying a quick web sling to span the street above him. The falling glass sliced through some of its strands, but most of it held. He poured on more webbing to catch the rest, then leapt down to the sun deck to check the wounded. But he heard the familiar sound of a cable bot descending and knew he was about to come under attack. The robot had put civilians in danger to distract him, leaving him vulnerable for the kill.
No piece of fishing tackle with delusions of grandeur gets the better of Spider-Man.
Spider-Man picked up a patio table and used it as a shield.
Anyone who can move, get the injured inside!
When the barrage halted, he heard the cable bot reeling to a new position. Leading its motion, he flung the table at it like a discus. Air jets puffed out at it, but the table had much more inertia than a web line and was only partly deflected. It still hit hard enough to rattle the cable bot. The mechanism recovered and came to bear on Spidey, firing a grapple right at him like a harpoon. He twisted away and caught it in midair.
Must be out of discs.
He webbed up the cable with his other hand, but the next cable shot was aimed at the civilians, who were still dragging the wounded to safety. Spidey caught the grapple in mid-flight with a web line and yanked it to a halt.
All right, that does it!
Jameson had really crossed a line, deliberately targeting innocents as pawns in their personal game. Spider-Man was burning with rage now. Luckily, he had a handy target. The robot tried firing a cable at him once more, but he leapt clear and tackled it bodily, pounding it with his fists. At first, it was a wild release of anger, but then he targeted his efforts. He planted his soles on the wall, got a grip on its cables, tore them free, and let the dead machine drop into the courtyard below. By now, the police and paramedics had arrived, the latter rushing into the building to see to the wounded. Spidey jumped down and intercepted a pair of them.
I can get you up there faster, folks. Hang on to your stretcher.
Sounds good to me.
Right.
They got a good grip, and he lifted the stretcher with both of them on it in one hand and clambered up the glass wall to the sun deck, where he put them down.
Watch your step. There's glass everywhere.
Thanks, Spidey.
Looking back down toward the street, he noticed a camera crew setting up on the scene as well.
Are we live? I want to make a statement before this gets distorted.
You bet. Just a sec.
The reporter turned to the cameraman, who signaled her a moment later.
Thanks, Diane. We're live at the Fifth Avenue Tower, where the battle between Spider-Man and two spider-like robots has just concluded. Amazingly, Spider-Man himself has just agreed to give this reporter an exclusive statement about the incident. That's right. You heard it here first.
Thank you. I want to make it clear what happened here before certain self-interested parties put their own spin on events. These robots attacked me while I was following up a lead on the prior robot attacks. They were clearly designed to target me personally, using cables to duplicate my moves and powerful air jets to deflect my webbing. When I defeated one of them, the other began shattering the building's windows, putting civilians in danger to distract me. I'm afraid, despite my best efforts, some people were injured. But as you can see, I put my own safety on the line to protect the people of New York.
He turned to show off his slashed flank and leg to the camera, as well as the bruised knuckles under his torn gloves.
How dare you?
Spidey and the reporter spun to see a middle-aged woman running toward them.
You big shot heroes and your fights up in the sky don't care what falls down on us folks below. My husband's dead!
Stunned, Spider-Man followed her gestures to where the paramedics were bringing out a stretcher bearing an occupied body bag.
The glass fell and it cut him. It cut him so bad.
Ma'am, I...
Because you, Mr. Big Shot Hero, was too busy crowing about how unstoppable you are. Boasting when you should have been seeing what that thing was about to do to us.
Spider-Man, is this true?
No. I'm sorry for this woman's loss, but she's not remembering clearly. I acted as soon as I possibly could, and I prevented most of the glass from reaching the ground. I know you want to blame me, ma'am, since I'm the one here. But the one who killed your husband is the one who built those robots, and I swear to you, I will find him and make him pay.
Get away from me! Just get away!
Spider-Man turned to the camera.
Do you hear me? I know you're watching, and I know you're going to try to turn this against me. But it won't work, you hear? You've crossed the line, and that changes everything. I know who you are, and I'm gonna prove it to the world. One way or another, you're going down.
The next morning, the following entry was posted in the wake-up call.
A number of commentators to this journal have complained that I devote far too many entries to my obsession with Spider-Man. Some have even gone so far as to make rude insinuations about the real reason I spend so much time thinking about the wall crawler. Although I wouldn't be surprised if it was Spider-Man himself making those statements. Here on the internet, it would be easy enough for Spider-Man to harass me anonymously. I accept that, and take solace in the fact that at least here, he can't shut me up by force. The fact is, I would love to be able to talk to you about anything other than costumed creeps with adhesive fingers. There are plenty of other things I have to say. I'd be delighted to share my positions on what the mayor, the governor, and especially the president are doing wrong, why this once great country is headed down the tubes, and what exactly needs to be done to get today's youth to straighten up and fly right. I'd love to spend my time talking to you about real heroes, the police officers, firefighters, and private citizens who go out there and protect people without hiding behind superpowers and fetish accessories. People who just do their jobs with no interest in fame or glory. I've made every attempt to discuss those ideas on this forum when I could. It is Spider-Man himself who's made that impossible. He's continued to disrupt this city with his ongoing feuds against mad scientists and costumed freaks, and in the past week, matters have escalated further with these robot attacks. His latest battle caused a cascade of broken glass that took the life of Paul Berry, a recently retired electrical engineer who made it good in life and was just starting to enjoy his sunset years along with his wife, Iona. Sadly, this is far from the first time that innocents have lost their lives to Spider-Man's feuds. But rarely has he been so callous and opportunistic about it. Rarely has he been so ready to exploit an innocent man's death to serve his own twisted agendas. If you watched the news last night, you saw Spider-Man jumping in front of a camera, determined to put his spin on the incident before anyone could take the time to assemble the facts. He claimed that the person behind the robot attacks intended to twist the facts of the incident against him. This just a day after he intruded on a press conference held by me and insinuated that I had some connection to the robot attacks. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Spider-Man's true agenda has now become clear, and it shows just how warped he's become. He intends to accuse me, J. Jonah Jameson, of being the mastermind behind these attacks. He wants to discredit his most stalwart critic and isn't above exploiting an innocent's death to do it. This is the action of a hero? True, I admit there was a time when I participated in a small number of robotics experiments aimed at the humane capture and unmasking of Spider-Man. On the majority of those occasions, there were outstanding warrants for his arrest, so I was simply doing my duty as one of New York's leading citizens. And I never endorsed or participated in an attack on anyone other than the wall crawler himself. It is Spider-Man himself who has escalated things in recent days. No longer content to play obnoxious pranks on me, he now seeks to frame me for a series of lethal attacks on our city, attacks he himself is responsible for in one way or another. This new belligerence, this new tactic of exploiting the press to libel his opponents, this increased contempt for human life, it points in a direction I'm frightened to contemplate. Spider-Man has always been obnoxious, irresponsible, a two-bit punk intoxicated with power. Now, though, he seems to be growing more and more unstable, more and more dangerous. I fear for my own safety now, and that of my family. But don't think I'll back down. I've faced thugs, gangsters, spies, assassins, and monsters in my career, and never let them stop me from doing the job of a journalist. I've always been ready to give my life in pursuit of the truth. And if I'm taken down for having the courage to tell the truth about the menace that is Spider-Man, then I can't think of a more honorable way to go. But better men than he have tried to take down J. Jonah Jameson, and I'm still here. So, you think you can take me, Spider-Man? Go ahead and try it.
Maybe I should start posting replies on Jameson's blog.
Peter had a brief window of time between MJ's return from rehearsals and his departure for his spiderly duties. He was already changing into his costume, and MJ took the opportunity to admire his lithe, muscular form, though she privately winced at the fresh cuts and bruises, a routine sight that she still had never gotten used to.
Not anonymously, but as Spider-Man. I could prove to him it was really me by reminding him of some private details or something. Like that time I webbed him to his office ceiling. Or that other time I webbed him to his office ceiling. If I post from a different library branch each time, it'd make it hard to track me down by ISP.
Should you really be bothering with all that when you should be out investigating?
I have to stop letting Jameson monopolize the press. This time I'm going to get my side of the story out there and keep it out there. Let people see the truth for themselves.
And why not just hire a press agent and get it over with?
Don't think I haven't thought about it. I'm tempted to do it myself. After all, as far as the public knows, Peter Parker's been Spider-Man's personal paparazzo for most of his career.
Peter Parker's also my husband, and Mary Jane Watson Parker doesn't want him drawing a lot of public attention to his connection to Spider-Man. I worry enough about you under the mask. I'd prefer you to have a minimum of people gunning for you when you take it off.
Hey, don't worry, MJ. I can take care of myself.
He resumed his preparations, filling a new batch of web fluid cartridges from the agglomeration of tubes and vials he'd used to mix it up. The still, as Mary Jane had come to think of it.
So what's the plan for tonight? A quick patrol and then back to bed, I hope?
We'll see. I might be staking out Jameson's place for a while.
I still can't believe J. Jonah Jameson is the one behind all this. I mean, he's no Mahatma Gandhi, but he's never been a killer.
People change, MJ. I've changed, you've changed, both for the better. But sometimes people change for the worse. Remember Norman Osborn? Harry Osborn? Miles Warren, Kurt Connors, there are monsters in all of us.
But think about it, Peter. All you have is a feeling. Every time you've tried to find solid evidence to back it up, something's happened to stop you.
That's my evidence right there, MJ. I go after Pruneface, I get attacked. Cause and effect. Besides, there aren't any other viable suspects.
Then maybe it's someone new.
It's Jameson, MJ. I know it. Spider sense doesn't lie. It's him, and I'm gonna prove it. I'll show the world what a lying hypocrite that man really is.
Is that what this is about? What's more important to you, Peter, saving lives or salving your ego?
This is what I do, MJ. I find the bad guys and I stop them.
But you're doing it differently lately, Peter. You're getting so...
confident? Determined?
Belligerent. Inflexible. You're throwing yourself headlong into your work these days, and I just wonder if maybe you should step back and get a little perspective.
Just because I'm not reciting Hamlet before every fight anymore doesn't mean I've lost perspective. Just the opposite. I finally stopped letting other people convince me I'm always wrong.
But you're not always right, either.
What are you saying? You think I've screwed up? Don't tell me you actually believe that woman on the news.
You mean Iona Berry?
She was upset, distraught. She didn't know what she was saying.
Then why did you bring her up? I just said you weren't always right, and that's what you immediately thought of.
Then what else did you mean?
I didn't mean anything specific. But it sounds like it's still on your mind. Like maybe you think you didn't act fast enough.
I reacted as soon as I could.
So you didn't stop to gloat?
Of course not. I did a bit of my usual trash talking, sure, but I thought it was running away. I can't read robot minds. I couldn't know it was going to smash the glass. Nobody could have.
Why did you assume it was running away?
MJ wasn't sure why she was questioning him so closely on this point. It seemed disloyal. And yet somehow, she felt it was necessary.
It had just seen me trash its partner. These things were adaptive. Or they were controlled by a human being. Either way, they reacted to what they saw. It knew it would get the same if it came after me, so it ran.
You mean it changed tactics? It attacked civilians to distract you?
Okay, yeah, but it was moving away from me. It made sense to assume it was retreating.
Don't you often tell me that people shouldn't assume anything?
Look, what are you trying to do here? Convince me I could have saved that guy, but didn't?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you've always been so careful before, and I'm worried what might happen if you get too cocky.
Just a week ago, you were telling me how happy you were that I stopped questioning myself all the time. Sounds like you've changed your mind.
I'm just...
No! I'm done with that. I'm done taking the blame for the way everyone else screws up my life. All the blame here is on Jameson's head for sending those robots after me. He's the killer here. He's the bad guy.
MJ looked at him sadly. She was very familiar with the sound of denial. For years, she had spent most of her time there, retreating from a troubled family life behind a shallow, fun-loving facade. Every time something bad had happened in her life, she had run off to find the next party and danced and played herself into oblivion. And when she'd first figured out that Peter was Spider-Man, then that she was falling in love with him, she had run away from that relationship, hiding within the jet-set glamour of a supermodel's life. It had taken years for her to mature enough to stop running away from her problems, to admit it when something went wrong, and accept that sometimes it was necessary to feel bad about things. And Peter Parker had done a great deal to help her grow into that understanding. But now, Peter's actions were starting to remind her of her old self. She knew him too well to believe he could so easily shake off any and all guilt for Paul Berry, or for his own students.
Nobody's saying you're the bad guy, Peter. But you've never been afraid to admit your mistakes before.
Why are you trying so hard to convince me I made a mistake? You're my wife, MJ. You should be supporting me in all this.
I am trying to support you, Peter. But that doesn't mean blindly agreeing with everything you say. Look, nobody can be right all the time. That's why it's good to have a partner, right? You know we're in this together.
Oh, are we? Then how come I've only seen you for like 5 minutes in the past 3 days?
You know how much time rehearsals take up.
I've sure had plenty of opportunity to learn. This is what, your third play in 2 months? As soon as you're done with one, you go find another. What, you can't take a break?
You know plays don't pay as well as movies. Would you rather I was out in Hollywood for 4 months at a time?
Then do some more modeling.
What, and give up trying to grow as a performer?
The more you grow as a performer, the more you shrink as a wife. I need you here, MJ.
Oh, really? Sounds to me like you don't need anybody anymore, Mr. Do-No-Wrong Superhero.
Well, maybe I don't!
So this is the new Peter Parker, huh? I think I like the old one better.
Maybe that's because he let you walk all over him, along with everybody else on the Eastern Seaboard. Well, no more!
Then he went where she couldn't follow, out the window and through the air.
Oh, shut up,
up, you stupid dog!
Barker, I didn't mean it. I'm sorry. You're not a stupid dog. It's humans who are stupid. I'm sorry.